أعمالنا من يهده الله فلا مضل له ومن يضلل فلا هادي له وأشهد أن لا إله إلا الله وحده لا شريك له وأشهد أن محمدا عبده ورسوله أما بعد. Then to continue with Lum'atul I'tiqad, the book of Creed and Belief compiled by the Imam Ibn Qudama al-Maqdisi rahimahullah, with the explanation of Shaykh Salih al-Fawzan hafidhahullah. Then we were still on the section of Al-Iman bil-Ghayb, Iman in the hidden and the unseen, a part where he goes through here some of the ashraf al-sa'ah, the signs of the last hour. Who can remember how many categories Shaykh al-Fawzan broke the signs of the last hour down into how many categories? There were three. What's three? The three being? The early signs, the middle signs, and the later signs. Now, obviously, sometimes they're broken down into lesser signs. Also, so if someone says two, it's broken into two, then from the aspect of lesser signs and the greater signs. But Shaykh al-Fawzan also mentioned another categorization into three with regard to the time period at which they appear. So both are right, inshallah. The initial signs, then the middle signs, and then the last signs, the later and last signs. Who can remember some sort of example or examples of the first kind of signs, the initial signs? What did he mention in that category? The sending of the Messenger sallallahu alayhi wasallam as a prophet, the initial spread of Islam, the victories of Islam, and the like of that. And he mentioned the middle category of signs. What did he mention about that, or what sort of time period did he put the middle signs in? Or what did he mention amongst it? Yeah. He mentioned this era that we're living in right now. These things that we see, that towns become closer together, so they have whole world appears like a single city, fast communications, great technologies and the like that are appearing at the present time. And with regard to the last signs, you can remember some examples from the last and greater signs. The Mahdi, that's right, and Isa bin Maryam himself, and so on and so on. And the last of the signs being, the last of the major signs being, the sun rising from its place of setting. No. Who can remember, with regard to the Mahdi, who can remember which tribe he'll be from, his lineage and his name? And his name will be Muhammad, the son of Abdullah. He'll be a descendant of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam through his daughter Fatima, and of course from the tribe of Quraysh. Therefore, who can remember who will kill Dajjal? Who and where? Who will kill Dajjal and where will he kill him? It'll be Isa ibn Maryam alayhi salam. He'll kill the Dajjal with a spear at the gate of Lod, a city in present day occupied Palestine. Who can remember who are the Ya'juj and Ma'juj? They're two groups of people, two tribes, and they're from the sons of Adam, from the descendants of Adam. Who can mention where they are now? Where are they now? Yeah. Obviously, with regard to the exact place of where they are, we don't know. We can't answer that question. We don't know. We don't have that knowledge. But they are behind the barrier that was erected by Dhulqarnain to keep them back. This great barrier between two huge mountains to keep them back. Where those two mountains are exactly and so on, we don't know. Who can remember what the name Ad-Dajjal, what does Dajjal indicate? His name Ad-Dajjal, his title of his, what does it indicate about him? From a Dajjal, which is lying, falsehood and lying, and a Dajjal means the great liar. In case that he is indeed a great liar. And what about his characteristics? Who can mention some of his physical characteristics? He'll be one-eyed. One of his eyes will be totally wiped away. Won't be there. He will proceed very, very quickly upon the earth, and he'll have kafir written on his forehead. The kaf and the fa and the ra. It'll be there, meaning unbeliever, kafir. It'll be there clearly to be seen. What does his title is Al-Masih, Al-Masih al-Dajjal. What is the part of his name or his title Al-Masih? What does that indicate? We said Dajjal, Al-Masih al-Dajjal. The Dajjal part means the great liar. What does Al-Masih mean with regard to him? Yeah. Meaning that he'll travel quickly over the face of the earth. He'll travel fast over the face of the earth. Otherwise? Yeah. Yeah, we go. Obviously, both things being correct, that's authentic. Well, the second part of meaning, obviously, from masaha to wipe, it can mean his eye is wiped away, that he only has one eye. Both these meanings are correct with regard to him. So some say he's called Al Masih or Dajjal, but it's called Al Masih because he travels very fast over the earth, which is true. Or some others say that no, or they say he's called Al Masih, meaning he's wiped, his eye is wiped away, he has just one eye there. And both meanings being correct. With regard to Isa alayhi salam, and he's also given the title Al-Masih. As Shaykh, for example, the Messiah of guidance, whereas the Dajjal is the Messiah of misguidance. So Isa alayhi salam is the Masih, Messiah of guidance. What does the term Masih mean with regard to Isa alayhi salam? Yeah, again referring to the same verb, wiping. This was with regard, as Sheikh Al-Fawzan mentions, with regard to the fact that Isa alayhi salam used to wipe his hand upon those who were sick, those who were ill. He would wipe his hand over them, and by Allah's permission they would be cured. So then the Imam Ibn Qudama, he continues in this section here on page of the Egyptian edition, page 201. The Saudi edition, something else nearby. Page 197 of the Saudi edition. The Imam Ibn Qudama, he continued. وخروج الدابة, and the emergence of the beast. Obviously all of this following on from what came before, where he mentioned that it's obligatory to have iman in the affairs of the hidden and the unseen, whatever is reported in that regard, whatever is authentic from Allah's Messenger sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. And he mentioned the section, then he followed that by saying, and from that are the signs of the hour. And then we had some of them last week, and now he continues, وَخُرُوجِ الدَّابَّ, and the emergence of the beast. Shaykh al-Fawzan said in explanation, الدَّابَّ, the beast which will emerge from the earth. Allah the Most High said, أَخْرَجْنَا لَهُمْ دَابَّةً مِنَ الْأَرْضِ, Surah An-Naml, the 27th Surah, Ayah 82, with the explanation, we shall bring out for them a beast from the earth. Shaykh al-Fawzan said, Allah knows best about its characteristics. There are some ahadith and narrations reported about that. However, Allah knows best about them. And Shaykh al-Fawzan is pointing out, obviously in the books of Tafsir and elsewhere, and there are some narrations describing how the beast will be. It will be like this, it will be the body of this animal and the tail of this animal, and so on. And Shaykh al-Fawzan, instead of going into all of that, he just says, there are, with regard to its description, Allah knows best, there are some ahadith and some narrations reported about that. However, Allah knows best about them. He said, and it is a beast which will emerge from the earth, just as Allah the Majestic and Most High said. As for how it will emerge, and from where it will emerge, and from the actual place, and the actual place of its emergence, then Allah knows best about that. So again, Shaykh al-Fawzan, he didn't delve into that. He didn't bring all the narrations that are brought and what people say, and he just mentioned Allah knows best about this, where it will come out from, what is the place, how it will come out, Allah knows best. And just as a side point, the same side point we had in Al-Aqidah Tahawiyyah, then Al-Qurtubi, obviously side point being this extra to the text, Al-Qurtubi said in his explanation of Sahih Muslim, Al-Mufhim, they differed with regard to its characteristics, and the characteristics of the beast, the Dabba. The scholars differed about descriptions of that. He said they have differed about its description and with regard to where it will emerge from, and they have many sayings in that regard. And there is not any authentic narration in that regard which is traced back to the Messenger sallallahu alaihi wasallam. There's nothing authentic from the Messenger sallallahu alaihi wasallam in that regard. What the beast will look like, or where it will come out from. All we have is a great difference of scholars and some weak narrations, in other words. Then the Imam Ibn Qudamah continued, وَطُلُوءِ الشَّمْسِ مِن مَغْرِبِهَا, and the rising of the sun from its place of setting. Shaykh al-Fawzan said in explanation, the sun rises from the east and it sets in the west. This is the way which Allah has established for the creation with regard to the sun, that it revolves around the earth from east to west, always and continually, not as is said by the atheists, that it is the earth which revolves around the sun, and that the sun is fixed. This is a case of turning people's innate natures and intellects upside down. I mean, the statement that the sun is fixed and the earth revolves around it. it's the turning upside down of people's innate natures and people's intellects. And it's opposite to what we know, opposite to what we see. Then the Sheikh said, rather the opposite is the case. It is the earth that is fixed, and the sun and the stars revolve around the earth. Just as Allah informed, and just as the Messenger informed, and just as is witnessed and felt. So it rises from the east and sets in the west. Just as Ibrahim alayhi salam said to An-Numrud, فَإِنَّ اللَّهَ يَأْتِي بِالشَّمْسِ مِنَ الْمَشْرِقِ فَأْتِ بِهَا مِنَ الْمَغْرِبِ. Surah Al-Baqarah, second surah, ayah 258, with the explanation in this discussion, this debate which Ibrahim alayhi salam had with this tyrant king An-Numrud, this one who claimed lordship for himself. Ibrahim alayhi salam said to him, then Allah brings the sun out from the east. So bring it out from the, or rather, Allah brings the sun out from the east. So bring it out from the west. Shaykh al-Fawzan said, when he claimed that he gives life and he gives death, and that he is the Lord. And then they mentioned, as a side point, they mentioned in Tafsir that when Ibrahim alayhi salam was debating with him, this evil tyrant who claimed kingship for him, who claimed lordship for himself, and then when Ibrahim alayhi salam informed him that Allah is the Lord, Allah is the one who gives life and gives death, that he had, wallahu alam, they mentioned in Tafsir that he brought some slaves, and he ordered one of them to be killed, and he ordered another one to be left. So he said, look, I give life and I give death as well. So then Ibrahim alayhi salam, instead of showing him the foolishness of his argument there, he brought this argument: فَإِنَّ اللَّهَ يَأْتِي بِالشَّمْسِ مِنَ الْمَشْرِقِ فَأْتِ بِهَا مِنَ الْمَغْرِبِ. Then Allah brings the sun out from the east, you bring it out from the west then. So as Shaykh al-Fawzan said, when he claimed that he gives life and gives death and that he is the Lord, he mentioned to him this tremendous sign which left him speechless, that Allah brings the sun out from the east. So if you, as you claim, are the Lord, then you bring it from the west, opposite to what Allah, the Perfect and Most High, wills. فَبُهِتَ الَّذِي كَفَرَ. Continuation of the ayah, فَبُهِتَ الَّذِي كَفَرَ. So the unbeliever was silenced in argument. Shaykh al-Fawzan said, because he was not able to do this, and no one is able to do this except for the Lord, the Perfect and Most High. So the established way of Allah with regard to the sun is that it comes from the east and it sets in the west, meaning it revolves around the earth. And if it is on one side giving light, then it is the daytime there, and then when it sets from that side, it becomes night until it comes around again. And likewise, night follows in succession with the day, based upon the sun revolving around the earth. This being from the ability of Allah, the Perfect and Most High. So when the arrangement of this creation is disrupted, and Allah wills to destroy this world, then the sun takes the opposite course, and will come out from the west. So when it rises from the west, then this will be a proof for the nearness of the establishment of the hour, and for the destruction of this ordered system of the creation, and that the hour is being established, and that the world has come to an end, and that the hereafter is occurring. And the Imam Ibn Qudamah continues, وَأَشْبَاهِ ذَٰلِكَ مِمَّا صَحَّ بِهِ النَّقْلِ, and the like of that from that which is authentically reported. And the like of that from that which is authentically reported. Sheikh al-Fawzan said in explanation, and the like of these reports which the author has mentioned as examples from the signs of the hour. مِمَّا صَحَّ بِهِ النَّقْلِ, from that which is authentically reported. Sheikh al-Fawzan said, this is an essential condition. These are matters of the hidden and the unseen. They cannot be established except with an authentic proof. As for a weak evidence, an evidence which is da'if, a weak evidence, and an evidence which does not reach the level of being sahih, of being authentic, then this is not relied upon in the aqidah, the creed and belief of the Muslim. Rather, reliance is only upon authentic evidences, evidences which are sahih, authentic, whether they be mutawatir or ahad, meaning whether they are mutawatir, reported by huge numbers of narrators at every stage of transmission, or whether they are not, whether they are ahad, reported by less people at some or all stages. This is the creed and belief of the Ahlus Sunnah, that they do not make a distinction between the mutawatir and the ahad. They don't make a distinction between the mutawatir and the ahad. It rests upon whether it is authentic only, whether it is sahih, authentic. So if the hadith is sahih, if the hadith is authentic, then it is obligatory to hold what it proves as belief and creed, as aqidah, without having doubt or misgivings, because it is the speech of one who does not speak from his own desires, and its chain of narration is authentic. So there remains no excuse to avoid having iman in it. And then the Imam Ibn Qudamah, he moves on, وَعَذَابُ الْقَبْرِ وَنَعِيمُهُ حَقٌّ, and the punishment of the grave and its bliss is true, and the punishment of the grave and its bliss is true. Sheikh al-Fawzan said in explanation, and likewise from the affairs which the Messenger sallallahu alayhi wa sallam informed of is عذاب القبر ونعيمه, is the punishment of the grave and its bliss. The ahadith in that regard are mutawatir, reported by huge numbers of people at every level of transmission. And the Mu'tazila deny the punishment of the grave and the bliss of the grave. So it's mentioned here, this deviant sect, the ones who deny the punishment of the grave, they are the Mu'tazila. The Mu'tazila deny the punishment of the grave and the bliss of the grave, based upon their corrupt intellects. And they say, we do not see anything in the grave. I mean, this is their argument. They deny it. Who denies the punishment of the grave? The Mu'tazila. What's their argument? They say, because we don't see, if we look into a grave, we don't see anything from that. Sheikh al-Fawzan responds, we say to them, are affairs founded upon what you witness and upon what you feel, you people, or upon the ability of Allah, the Majestic and Most High. What happens and what's the reality and so on, what's it based upon? What you people witness and you people feel only, or everything is based upon the ability of Allah, the Majestic and Most High. Your intellects and your feelings have no scope for entering into this. So the Mu'tazila denied the punishment of the grave and its bliss based upon their corrupt intellects. Then Shaykh al-Fawzan, he gives the correct position with regard to it and says, and the punishment of the grave is confirmed by the book and the sunnah and the ijma', the consensus of the Ahlul Sunnah wal Jama'ah. Allah, the Majestic and Most High, said, وَلَنُذِيقَنَّهُمْ مِنَ الْعَذَابِ الْأَدْنَى دُونَ الْعَذَابِ الْأَكْبَرِ Surah Sajdah, the 32nd Surah, Ayah 21, with the explanation, and we will make them taste the lesser punishment before the greater punishment. Shaykh al-Fawzan said, they said, meaning the scholars of tafsir, they said, the lesser punishment is the punishment of the grave. Or, it is what comes to them in this world from trials and calamities. So the adhab al-adna, the lesser punishment, it is said it is the punishment of the grave, and it is otherwise said it is what befalls them in this world from calamities and disasters and from the Muslims overcoming them by killing and taking captive and other than this. And there is nothing to prevent both of these matters being meant. So Shaykh al-Fawzan mentions two sayings that occur in tafsir with regard to what is it meant by the lesser punishment, either the punishment of the grave, as some say, or calamities and the like in this world. And as he said at the end here, and there's nothing to prevent both of them being what is meant here. Then he said, he gives a second evidence. وَكَذَلِكَ And likewise, his saying, he the Most High, with regard to the people of Fir'aun, the people of Pharaoh. النَّارُ يُعْرَضُونَ عَلَيْهَا غُدُوًا وَعَشِيًّا وَيَوْمَ تَقُومُ السَّاعَةُ أَدْخِلُوا آلَ فِرْعَوْنَ أَشَدَّ الْعَذَابِ Surah Ghafir, the 40th Surah, Ayah 46, with the explanation about the people of Fir'aun. After their deaths, they will be exposed to the fire morning and evening, and on the day when the hour is established, it will be said, enter the people of Fir'aun into the severest punishment. Shaykh al-Fawzan said, so he's saying, he the Majestic and Most High, النَّارُ يُعْرَضُونَ عَلَيْهَا غُدُوًا وَعَشِيًّا, that they will be exposed to the fire morning and evening. This is with regard to the punishment of the grave. Then he said, وَيَوْمَ تَقُومُ السَّاعَةُ أَدْخِلُوا آلَ فِرْعَوْنَ Then he said, the part of the ayah with the explanation, and on the day when the hour is established, it will be said, enter the people of Fir'aun, to the end of the ayah. Ashad al-Adhab, into the severest torment. Shaykh al-Fawzan said, so it shows that the punishment of the morning and the evening is in this world, and that is in the grave, meaning after their death. The ayah is in the context of after the drowning of Fir'aun and his people. This ayah is in that context. So this punishment, as the Shaykh said, so this shows that the punishment of the morning and the evening which comes upon them is in this world, and that is in the grave. And then when the hour is established, they will go to the severest punishment, and Allah's refuge is sought. So the ayah contains a proof for the punishment of the grave, along with the ahadith which are mutawatir, reported by huge numbers of narrators at every level, from Allah's Messenger sallallahu alayhi wa sallam in that regard. Then the Imam Ibn Qudamah, he continues, and he mentions something from the Sunnah. He said, وَقَدْ اسْتَعَاذَ النَّبِيُّ صَلَّى اللَّهُ عَلَيْهِ وَسَلَّمْ مِنْهُ وَأَمَرَ بِهِ فِي كُلِّ صَلَاتٍ. He said, and the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam sought refuge from it, and he commanded that this should be done in every prayer. Still referring to the punishment of the grave, and the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam sought refuge from it, and he commanded that this should be done in every prayer. Shaykh al-Fawzan said in explanation, the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam sought refuge from the punishment of the grave. So this proves that it is true, and that it occurs and is confirmed. Otherwise, the Messenger sallallahu alayhi wa sallam would not have sought refuge from it. And he commanded that refuge should be sought from it in every prayer. So he sallallahu alayhi wa sallam said, Ista'idhu billahi min arba'in. من عذاب جهنم ومن عذاب القبر ومن فتنة المحيا والممات ومن فتنة المسيح الدجال. That he sallallahu alayhi wa sallam said, seek Allah's refuge from four: from the punishment of the hellfire, and from the punishment of the grave, and from the trials of life and death, and from the trial of al-Masih Ad-Dajjal. In a footnote they mentioned, this hadith is reported by Ahmad in the Musnad, and by Muslim and Abu Dawood and Al-Nasa'i, from a hadith of Abu Hurairah radiallahu anhu. And as a side point here, then Muslim also reports another narration from, by way of Tawus, from Ibn Abbas radiallahu anhuma, where the Messenger sallallahu alayhi wa sallam also commanded seeking refuge from these four. And then Muslim mentions, it reached me that Tawus, the narrator of the hadith, the narrator from the Tabi'een, who narrated it from Ibn Abbas, this second narration, it reached me that Tawus said to his son, did you make supplication with it in your prayer? He narrated this hadith about seeking refuge from the four. So then Tawus asked his son, did you seek refuge from it in your prayer, or did you make supplication with it in your prayer? So he said, no. He said, then repeat your prayer. And continuing with the side point, Al-Qurtubi said in his explanation of Muslim Al-Mufhim, the command of Tawus, obviously famous Tabi'i of Yemen, the scholar of Yemen, student of Ibn Abbas, he said, the command of Tawus to his son that he should repeat, meaning his prayer, because he had not sought refuge from these things, is a proof that he used to believe that it is obligatory to seek refuge from them in the prayer. Because the Messenger sallallahu alayhi wa sallam commanded we should seek refuge from these four things, so it's a command of the Messenger sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, so it's upon us. So whoever hasn't learned this supplication for the end of the prayer, before the salah, then they should learn it and seek refuge from the four. And this obligation, this was stated to be an obligation by some of the Zahiris, and by Ibn Hazm, and by Shaykh al-Albani, rahimahumullah. And back to the main text, then Shaykh al-Fawzan continued, after mentioning the hadith, seek refuge with Allah from four: from the punishment of the hellfire, and from the punishment of the grave, and from the trials of life and death, and from the trials of Al-Masih al-Dajjal. He said, and the witness is that the Messenger sallallahu alayhi wa sallam commanded seeking refuge from the punishment of the grave. So it shows that it is a punishment which will occur and happen, and that the believer should seek refuge from it. And he makes a further point and says, and there are causes which bring about punishment in the grave. And it can even happen to the believers. It can even happen to the believers because of its causes, since they will be punished in their graves from them. I mean, from these causes which can bring about punishment in the person's grave is al-ghiba, backbiting, and an-namima, carrying tales between the people to cause corruption between them, to cause trouble between them. And from them is not keeping oneself clean from urine, because the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam passed by two graves and said, إِنَّهُمَا لَيُعَذَّبَانِ وَمَا يُعَذَّبَانِ فِي كَبِيرٍ أَلَا إِنَّهُ لَكَبِيرٌ أَمَا أَحَدُهُمَا فَكَانَ لَا يَسْتَبْرِئُ مِنْ بَوْلِهِ وَأَمَّا الْآخَرُ فَكَانَ يَمْشِي بِالنَّمِيمَةِ. He said, the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam passed by two graves and said, they are being punished, these two are being punished, and they are not being punished for something major. Indeed, it is something major. As for one of them, he had not used to keep himself clean from his urine. And as for the other, then he used to walk around carrying tails to cause trouble, namima. In a footnote they mention, this is reported by Al-Bukhari as hadith 6055 and by Muslim from a hadith of Ibn Abbas radiallahu anhuma. Whereas the previous hadith seeking refuge from the four was a hadith of Abu Huraira radiallahu anhu, this one being a hadith of Ibn Abbas radiallahu anhuma. Then Shaykh Fawzan commented saying, so this shows that the punishment of the grave can occur to the believer because of sins which he committed in the world. And likewise, his saying, sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, إِنَّ الْمَيِّتَ لَيُعَذَّبُ فِي قَبْرِهِ بِمَا نِيحَ عَلَيْهِ. So likewise, his saying, sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, the dead person will be tormented in his grave because of the wailing which is done over him. In a footnote they mention, this is reported by Al-Bukhari, hadith 1292, and by Muslim from a hadith of Umar ibn al-Khattab radiallahu anhu. Then he said, so an-niyaha, lamenting or wailing over the dead, causes him to be tormented, and it is a cause from those causes which bring about his punishment in his grave. والحمد لله وصلى الله على محمد. Then we'll leave that section, or we'll leave that and the rest of the section till next time inshallah. Before I forget, I'm semi-officially told to announce that next week's circle will be at 7:30 inshallah. If there's any change to that, then it'll be announced at Jumu'ah inshallah, but until further, unless there's any further clarification or further change, next week's circle will be at 7:30 inshallah. Now, any points of clarification? With regard to just the point here, the point that Sheikh Al-Fawzan made near the beginning here, that way he stated quite plainly that as is indicated in the text, the sun revolves around the earth is fixed, and the sun revolves around the earth. And he mentioned that those who say I mentioned that the saying of the atheists being the other way around. So the earth revolves around the sun. So this is something that, likewise, as the brother who asked the question mentioned, somebody, Sheikh bin Baz, he wrote a whole small treatise on this matter. He wrote a small booklet on this years ago, and the book's been available for how many years. And it's something that it's a good point, good place to point it out. It's been pointed out enough times, but yet again, inshallah. The unbelievers, and unfortunately some of the Muslims as well, they quote a lie upon Sheikh bin Baz, rahimahullah. The Sheikh bin Baz's book is available. Anyone who wants to take the book, if you can get hold of it's an old print, his book has been available. Sheikh bin Baz, rahimahullah, made the same point. He affirmed that the book of Allah, the sunnah of his messenger sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, consensus of the Muslims, which is quoted by some, and likewise what we actually physically see and experience ourselves, all of them point to the same thing, that the sun revolves around the earth. What Sheikh bin Baz rahimahullah did not mention in that book, and what he did not hold, is that the earth is flat. Some people mix the two things up, or either just out of ignorance, or deliberately out of it with evil motives, or because some of the kafirs, you know, kafirs in the past, they hold these two things together: the earth is flat and the sun goes around. Doesn't matter what the kafirs hold. Sheikh bin Baz rahimahullah held the same as the Muslim scholars held, the same as Sheikh Islam Ibn Taymiyyah held before him, that the earth is a spherical shape, roughly spherical. Sheikh Islam Ibn Taymiyyah points this out in Al-Fatawa from how many centuries before. The earth is roughly a spherical shape. Which was Sheikh bin Baz was not upon anything different to that. Sheikh bin Baz rahimahullah did not hold that the earth is flat. He did not write that in his book. His book's there, it's not in his book at all. And contrary to what some of the idiots say, Sheikh bin Baz did not hold that the earth is flat until one of the Saudi princes went into space and said, it came back and said, oh, the earth's round, so he had to change his view. This is absolute nonsense. It's just, you know, the kafirs say it, that's up to them what they say. But the reality is that any Muslim should say this. It's sad, it's a sad bit, basically. Anyway, the point that Sheikh Al-Fawzan makes here is the same point that Sheikh bin Baz rahimahullah made, that according to what's apparent from the Book of Allah, the Most High, it is the earth which is fixed and the sun which goes around. And he quotes a number of ayahs in that regard. Likewise, he quotes a number of authentic ahadith, like the hadith of Abu Dharr radiallahu anhu, and other ahadith. He also quotes some of the earlier Muslim scholars, consensus of the Muslim scholars upon that. And then finally, as a final proof, he says, that's what we witness and see. If you go out, we don't see the earth going around the sun. Quite the opposite. In the day, we notice the sun comes, it moves around the sky, and goes down the other way. So for someone to say the opposite, they would have to, they have to bring some strong evidence for that. No. So just a clarification there. Sheikh bin Baz rahimahullah did not say the earth is flat. He did not hold that, and then have to change his view. With regard to the question on the is the dead person tormented in the grave even if he did not ask the people to wail on his behalf? Then the people of knowledge, they have some different explanations about this hadith that occurs here. Some of the people of knowledge point out that the hadith applies to a person who encourages people to wail for him. I mean, it's part of his culture and what he believes and he wants, and he encourages his family, for example, that when I die, make sure that you give a big show and you wail over me. Then that is the type of person who the hadith applies upon, because he thought this action, so it's a result of his actions. And as for a person who forbids his people, he does what he can to forbid his people from it, but then still they wailed over him, then some of the people knowledge say a person like that will not be accountable and will not be punished in his grave if the people disobey him. And some of the people of knowledge, amongst them Sheikh Al-Albani rahimahullah, they mention that the hadith means that if the people wail over a person's grave, then it causes harm to him. It means it causes harm him hearing this noise of wailing and the like. It causes harm to him. That's the meaning of the hadith. Wallahu a'lam. سبحانك اللهم وبحمدك أشهد أن لا إله إلا أنت أستغفرك وأتوب إليك.
Thank you.